The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Welcome to WWER. My name is Ted Tate, and today on 88.1 FM, I have Dean Nowyuk, the Potomac Riverkeeper, and you are part of the Potomac Riverkeeper Network. Is that right, Dean?
That's correct. Thanks for having me.
You guys are involved in making the Potomac River and its tributaries safe for people to enjoy, right?
That's our mission.
What else is your mission?
Well, the big part of our mission is, and really what riverkeepers do, is we serve as a full-time watchdog for the river. We enforce clean water laws, we find sources of pollution, and we work to eliminate sources of pollution using citizen provisions under the Clean Water Act. And we've done that for 25 years now. We have three riverkeepers, one in the Upper Potomac, one on the Shenandoah. My jurisdiction goes from Harper's Ferry all the way down to the bay.
Wow, that's a big territory.
That's big, yes.
And you do this both by shore and by boat?
You know, most river keepers, at least in the United States, are required to have a patrol boat. We have a pollution hotline for tips, so people can call and let us know about pollution. We're required to do routine patrols, and so we do it by boat, we do it by air. We have, you know, volunteer pilots that help us with aerial flyovers. We have, we use drones. So we do our own investigations to basically protect and defend the Potomac River. It's worked very well in terms of just finding the bad actors in the watershed and then eliminating those sources of pollution.
Let's back off just a little bit. Mm-hmm. The riverkeepers are not a government agency.
We are not. We're a nonprofit, a 501c3 tax deductible organization.
So you're a nonprofit organization that was started by somebody who cared about clean water. Mm-hmm. But you said that what you do, certain things that you do, are regulated by law. Can you explain that?
So under the Clean Water Act and other laws like the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, there are citizen provisions that when the state or federal agencies fail to enforce or protect water quality, we can actually step into the shoes of the Attorney General, basically, and take a polluter to court. And we've done that on many, many occasions. And so we leverage about $2 million a year in free, you know, pro bono legal service for the river. And so, you know, we've had to take on some of the biggest polluters in the whole watershed, Dominion Power and others. You know, we've been very effective over the last 25 years of just finding sources of pollution that are threatening water quality and then eliminating those sources. But the reason that we are a nonprofit, not a government agency, is that sometimes we've had to sue the agency themselves to make them do their jobs to protect water quality and the public health.
Right. Okay. So when the government is slacking, you guys step in as well and can go to the courts and say, hey, these guys aren't doing their job.
And then in some cases, you know, we'll file a lawsuit. We're dealing with this right across the river on St. Mary's River with Metcalm Sewage. The Attorney General of Maryland joined us in our case, and now we're working together. So sometimes our work often leads to the state taking action on an issue that really wasn't on the radar until we got involved with it.
Wow, so you guys are really making law.
Yeah,
and, well, enforcing, and then enforcing law as well.
Yes.
Well, but you can affect the way laws are made, I suspect, too, just by the way.
Well, we definitely do policy work to, you know, and it's usually focused around the issue of enforcement and compliance, a lot of the things that we work on. This is a wonderful tool that any citizen has in the country. I think when Congress created the Clean Water Act, they recognized that citizens, that the regulatory agencies would not be able to fix and clean up our waterways alone, that they really needed citizens and citizen groups. And so all the people that are members of the organization provide legal standing for us to take polluters to court. And we've done that very successfully now for about 25 years as an organization.
Wow. Now, when you say all of the members and all the people, so as a nonprofit group, you guys have citizens who volunteer their time?
Yeah, so we have just, you know, we have members. We have about 2,000, 2,500 members or so. Different ways that people get involved, but we have, you know, volunteer opportunities, and we can talk about that. But some people are just literally care enough about the river that they provide us the legal standing. So, for example, right down, we have a Namanai Bay Oyster Ranch is a member of ours. They've been standing witnesses in some of our cases because they use the river, they represent the interests of the river, and they are a member of our organization. They provide us legitimate legal standing in the courts to hold polluters accountable, eliminate sources.
So there's a case where there's a commercial enterprise who are working the river every day as part of how they make their income. They have a very vested interest in the health of the river, so they act as a member with you guys and work in conjunction with you to keep an eye on things.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why we have a hotline as well, because we can't be everywhere. So we rely very heavily on people who are out on the water using the river to let us know when they see bad things that are happening with the river.
And then someone like yourself follows up and actually tries to see it in action, whatever it is,
yes.
Whether it's pollution in the water or somebody dumping something in the water or what have you. What is a typical, and I put that in quotes, day for you? Where what are you doing on a typical day? That's a hard question, I realize.
Some days I'm literally in the courtrooms. I've testified on the witness stand for 2 days or being deposed by, you know, big corporations, you know, in a lawsuit that we're in. But then other days I'm doing public speaking or I'm actually out on the water doing patrols or our investigations into pollution. And then some days I'm, you know, sitting at my couch, working from home, working on grants, you know, or doing TV interviews. So it really depends. And I do enjoy that aspect of the job.
Well, let me narrow the question for you.
Yeah.
On what's a typical day for you when you're out, like on the river, doing your patrolling or your investigating? What's that like?
Well, I mean, we've been investigating the Morgantown coal-fired power plant right near Colonial Beach for the last 8 years or so. So sometimes I'll bring my patrol boat down, we'll load a canoe on top of it, and we'll get all our sampling equipment and drones, and then we'll go up past Gehanza Creek, anchor the patrol boat, and we'll fly a drone up, and then we'll launch the canoes, and we'll actually be paddling up to grab a water sample while we're using drones to investigate if sources and things that we've observed in the past have changed any, and get visual data of the things that we're doing. So we have found a lot of problems. We challenged that permit. We got stronger provisions in the permit in 2017 because of discharges that we actually documented that the company, Genon, denied was happening. But we had very visual discharges of heavy metals and them discharging illegally, in my opinion. And the state took that very seriously. They actually required Genon to strengthen their permit to eliminate selenium, arsenic, mercury discharges to the Potomac River, which is really dangerous to fish and people, and particularly the fish that people are eating. So that's just one example.
You're out and you actually see visible discoloration in the water, knowing that something that shouldn't be there is there. You take samples and get it tested in the lab, and you've got your drones that potentially show you where it's coming from.
Yep, we do that. And sometimes, you know, we'll get tips and then it doesn't result in much, you know, but, you know, this is part of the challenge of the job. But, you know, again, it's why we've been effective as an organization is, you know, we are, you know, sometimes we can find a polluter's problems and their history of non-compliance just through their own records. They're called discharge monitoring reports. And sometimes those records are all we need. But in other cases where, like Dominion's coal ash, these ponds are unlined and they've been leaking all these toxic heavy metals for decades in the river, we had to do our own investigation to show that this was a real harmful problem and that it was leaking into the river. And we passed legislation in 2019 requiring Dominion to clean up all 28 million tons of coal ash. And put it into a line system and recycle about 25% of that, right, to get it away from the river and not have these leaking toxic coal ash ponds leaching into the river indefinitely, which is what Dominion wanted to do.
So this was a situation where basically we thought it was safe, they thought it was safe, nobody had any evidence that these things were unsafe, and you guys went in and did testing and discovered that, hey, these things are leaching into the river. We're pretty sure it's coming from you because this is where we're testing it and this is where it's happening. And so as a result, as you say, something that nobody was doing wasn't on anybody's radar. And you guys are able to point out and say, hey, this is a problem.
that's usually, and that's, like I said, why we often investigate. But then again, sometimes these tips come from kayakers. I'm dealing with the upriver with the Washington Aqueduct, this water treatment plant, and these kayakers observed the stream turning black for two straight days. Mm. I wasn't around. I asked them to go take pictures. They took pictures. I went back and I traced it back to the water treatment plant that the Army Corps of Engineers runs, right? They denied it. They even did it. That happened. But then I worked with volunteers who lived right across the street. They started observing these illicit discharges, and it's taken 2 years now. But now the state of Maryland is making them go get an actual permit for that unpermitted discharge. And so if that doesn't work, then we are like looking at potential legal enforcement mechanisms that we can do to make them come into compliance. But they can't just continue to discharge without a permit this effluent into, it's called Little Falls Branch, which flows into the Potomac River. But I would have never noticed it if it wasn't for kayakers out there on a January 2nd day when it just happened to be warm enough where kayakers are out enjoying their time out there.
You really depend on the eyes and ears of a lot of other people. Yeah. Because one person can't be
everywhere.
Cannot
be everywhere, that's for sure.
Yeah. And this is all part of your mission to make the Potomac swimmable for everyone. Do you want to talk a little bit about that in particular?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, the goals of the Clean Water Act, you know, when it was passed 50 years ago, were to make all waters in the United States swimmable and fishable again, right? And it's a very, you know, worthy goal, but citizen groups need to be part of that effort, right? And so the Potomac River, as most people know, Lyndon Johnson declared it a national disgrace in 1965, right? But he also said it should be a model for recreation, and we believe that, and it's become that, quite frankly. And it doesn't, you don't have to go far, whether it's here in DC or further upriver in Harper's Ferry, all the way down in the mouth. There's just tens of thousands of people that recreate on this river every year and swim on it. And we've come a long way. It took a long time to mess up this river, and it's taken over 50 years to start slowly cleaning it up. I think, quite frankly, our work over the past 25 of enforcing those laws and finding the worst polluters and suing them and bringing them into compliance have really helped expedite cleaning up this river. We're seeing a lot of success now. This river has come a long way from where it was 20, 30 years ago, and we're really proud of that. But here in DC, where my office is based, it's still illegal to swim. And it really bothered me that this was the only municipality in the country that banned swimming because of their sewage pollution problem. And they have combined sewer systems, and so does Alexandria. And so we've been working on that for over 10 years now, but I'm proud to say that by 2030, both those combined sewer systems in Alexandria and DC are going to be fixed. And that's literally not hundreds of millions, but billions of gallons of sewage-laden stormwater that won't be going into the river anymore. And this river, at least in the DC area, will be cleaner in 2030 than it is today. So, you know, our legacy is like, how do we give back a river so that future generations actually have the ability to swim comfortably and not fear about getting sick or harmed by, you know, swimming in the river? And really, a lot of it is about eliminating these sources of pollution. And that's the biggest focus of our mission, is to eliminate those sources of pollution so that people can swim and recreate and enjoy this resource, which is a public resource and it belongs to everybody, and everybody has the right to use it.
That's great. As somebody who's been here for those 30 years, I can definitely say I've seen the improvement. And I guess I've broken the law a few times because I have gone swimming in the Potomac.
So have I.
Well, sometimes people do it not on purpose, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's great that you guys are making so much progress. And I know you mentioned billions of gallons of sewage. And I know they're spending billions of dollars to fix the problem. I mean, it's not an easy one. And it's not one that anybody's going to volunteer to do or spend that money. So it takes agencies like yours to put the pressure on to make them do it. One of the things you do to show that the river is getting healthier is testing and monitoring. You want to talk a little bit about that?
So when I first started here as the Potomac Riverkeeper in 2015, literally people would call me and say, hey, how's the river doing? Is it safe to go swimming? And I started looking into the bacteria data. There was very little data, at least in the main stem of the Potomac, where most people are recreating. And I'm talking anywhere. National Harbor, which is basically in Maryland waters, has a weekly swim. And there was no data, zero, none. And so as a riverkeeper, it was very uncomfortable for me to try and tell people, hey, it's okay to go in the river.
You don't want to say it's safe when you don't really know.
And we didn't have the data, right? So the best I could do is say, stay out of the river for at least 48 hours after rain. But we eventually started this water quality monitoring program, and we do weekly sampling now at 30 different locations. And we sample every Wednesday, and we run the incubator and do the analysis on Thursdays and post our information onto an app called Swim Guide so that people know going into the weekends whether it's safe for swimming or not at those locations, right? And we have Swim Guide. We've now had over 90,000 people in the last 3 years go to it to, Potomac River users to find out whether it's safe to use the river or not. And it's really made a big difference. And so, and it's really helped me understand where are the hot spots. So quite frankly, areas near DC where the combined sewer systems are, near Georgetown, where all these, kids are rowing crew and where all these people are paddling. Those are some of the hot spots where there's a lot of combined sewage still occurring. Again, it won't be fixed till 2030. But if you go farther downriver, like Pohick Bay and other places, we're seeing pretty good water quality consistently. 80, 90% of the time, it's safe enough for human contact. And so we sample May through October in the warm months of the year so that people have that information. And what's great about Swim Guide is it monitors like 8,000 beaches and swimming areas around the world. But really, all you gotta do is pull it up, it'll notify your location, and it gives you a red or green, pass or fail, whether those conditions are met. So we just opened a new lab down at Colonial Beach, and we sample at 3 locations down there. And we've had some great volunteers, but we're always looking for some new volunteers for next sampling season.
Okay, so this is, you're sampling in 3 different locations in the Colonial Beach mm-hmm. area. So that's a pretty good test of whether or not it's safe to swim in Colonial Beach. And this is an app people can download called Swim Guide.
Correct.
I just want to make sure our listeners catch that.
Yep.
And literally, it uses your GPS to know where you are and gives you a red or a green light. Nice and simple. It's safe to swim. It's not safe to swim.
Mm-hmm. Whether you're on Colonial Beach or Miami Beach or New Zealand, that data, if there's data available, there's a group like ours uploading it. There's over 8,000 places.
Oh, this is a global app.
This is a global app.
Oh, so you could go to Atlantic City and use this app.
And if there's a group there that's doing the testing and uploading the data, then so right now we have about 8,000 locations around the world with regular, sometimes it's daily sampling, so usually weekly or biweekly. It's just very helpful to know, to make people feel a little bit more comfortable about going in the river, because I think the problem with all the pollution issues we've had in the Potomac, unfortunately, is there's this legacy like that a lot of people think it's still really, really dirty and they're not comfortable going into it. And so we want people to be safe, right? We want people to go and use the river safely, but with science-based understanding, right? They know now when it's safe to use the river, when it's not. We have that data available, and that's what we're trying to encourage. We just don't want people not swimming because they heard 30 years ago the river was polluted and they haven't had a real update about what the conditions of the river are.
It's hard to shed old ideas about things.
Yeah, we're changing perception for sure.
So you mentioned testing in the Colonial Beach area and volunteers who apparently help you do that testing. Tell us a little bit about that and how that works.
What's amazing about our community science water quality monitoring program is it's literally all run by volunteers. We, I help oversee the program and we have a volunteer coordinator, but the reality is our lab is managed by volunteers and every person that collects a sample is a volunteer that brings those samples back to our lab. And it's just been extraordinary to see the 75 to 100 volunteers that are part of this program just make it work every single year for the last 5 years now. And I've just been so proud to see just how many volunteers have stepped up. And really, just because we know that so many people care about the river, right? They do care about this river. They want to see it clean and healthy. And they're just trying to find ways to get involved and support our work.
So if somebody in the Colonial Beach area or anywhere along the Potomac is interested in helping you guys out and doing some of this testing or helping in some other way, what's the best way to volunteer to get involved?
Well, I mean, again, just let us know. You can email volunteer@PotomacRiverKeeperNetwork.org or just reach out to our office at Potomac River Keeper Network. Depending on where you are in the watershed, we'll figure out a way to potentially get you involved. We do have some gaps, throughout some of the watershed between D.C. and Colonial Beach, but we're still looking for resources and funding to continue to support where we know. And I think what's really important to understand is that we sample every week in areas that are high recreational use. We try to sample where people are using the river. And so we still have some of those gaps throughout the watershed. But like we just expanded into Occoquan River, where there's a lot of big boating community, a lot of people recreate and stuff. So we're doing our best to like expand this to throughout the watershed and engage people. And really, you know, I call it building community around clean water, right? We do river cleanups, we do volunteer water quality monitoring and other things. We're bringing this big 50 million mussel project to the Potomac River because mussels are these important filter feeders up in the freshwater areas. And so we're just doing what we can to help turn this river back to a clean and healthy, vibrant river so that everybody has use and enjoyment of it and everybody feels safe about using it. We know we still have a ways to go, but the progress we've made has been tremendous. And it's the nation's river, and it deserves it, right? It deserves our attention and respect.
I completely agree. Now, one of the reasons I invited you to talk to us on WWER is, of course, because on the July 4th holiday, the Colonial Beach area had a spillage issue from our own water treatment plant. And as I understand it, they got you guys involved in what was going on there. Can you talk me through a little bit about what happened in from your perspective and what you guys did as a response to that spill?
Well, I will say we're still investigating that, you know, but basically, as most people know, there was a 1.3 million gallon spill, we believe, on July 3rd. It wasn't made aware to the public till later. We did our own sampling right around that time. Our sampling showed the water quality was fine enough, was good enough for human contact. But again, we were all the way down at the lower end of Colonial Beach where we're sampling and up in Monroe Bay. So it doesn't surprise me our sampling did not detect that. But what we're seeing is we don't believe it's a compliance issue with the plant itself. We are starting to see through some of the data that we've dug into that there have been issues with they're called SSO, sanitary sewer overflows, where the pipes and systems that take all the sewage from a variety of locations to the sewage treatment plant for treatment, there's been some issues with some of the sewer overflows. And so we're trying to get a good handle on this. And I will say, like directly across the river, a little bit downriver in St. Mary's County, we actually filed a lawsuit against Metcom Sewage because they had over 39 sewer overflows. So their plant was okay, but they kept having routine sewage overflows that were impacting oysters and watermen, got people sick in one instance. And so when we started digging into their data, we could see that it was a repeat problem with their collection system. And that tends to be a problem with a lot of sewage treatment plants. So I'm not really willing to say that that's what's happening here, but I am saying that some of the records are showing that we see SSOs, these sewage overflows. And so the next step, we met with public health fairly recently. I wanted to get a better idea about why there's consistent closures for oyster fishing, harvesting in Rosiers Creek. We don't really have the data to show where that potential source is coming from. We just know that there's high bacteria levels in Rosiers Creek, and that just happens to be where the sewage spill happened. And so it certainly wasn't good for the oyster leasing rights in that creek. But we need to find out and get a better job are there routine SSOs that are happening in Rosiers Creek that may have that are causing these shellfish closures on a routine basis, right? I don't have that answer yet. We're still digging into the data.
And in terms of response on that particular weekend or the weeks after when people were still questioning whether it was safe or not, did you guys do any extra testing or anything beyond your normal Wednesday tests?
No, because by the time we found, if you remember, there was a delay in finding out when there was that closure. And we've seen problems with that in the past. That's why people got sick across the river, why we ended up suing Metcom Sewage, because, you know, it was a delay in 2 weeks. Now, it wasn't that long here, but it is a little concerning why it took so long for the town or whoever. And that's where we don't have a good idea about where was that breakdown in communications. Was it from the town not properly reporting out to Virginia DEQ and then ultimately getting that information over to MDE? When I asked Virginia DEQ, was the closure based on data, like actual data? They said no, it wasn't based on data. It was based on the actual size of the sewage spill, right? So there was no data supporting the actual closure at that time. It was more of a precautionary issue. So that doesn't surprise me, again, that our data showed nothing, which was further downstream, because remember the closure was, I was surprised at actually how big the closure was. I mean, basically from, you know, Dahlgren, you know, all the way down to Colonial Beach, all the way over to Cobb Island. I was thinking, God, it must take millions of gallons of sewage to do that. We then found out later it was a 1.3 million gallon spill. I think, you know, since MDE has control over the Potomac River, but they were still having to communicate through Virginia Department of Health and Virginia DEQ, and then find, which MDE doesn't have a direct pipeline to Colonial Beach. I think there was just areas where information was breaking down.
I've spoken with the mayor of Colonial Beach about all of this, and what you're saying basically falls in line with what she said, which is that, you know, Maryland did this closure, and it was, I think they were calling it a shellfish closure, not necessarily, they did both, okay. Mm-hmm. But they did it without even consulting with Colonial Beach. And yes, they, from what the mayor told me, they didn't have a direct line of communication with them. So these things were all sort of happening in their silos, and the communication just was not there. And I've had a conversation on air with the mayor about how they plan to improve their conversation, not only amongst themselves, but also with the public, and that they want to work on that, because it all didn't really go the way you'd hoped it would.
And just because our data showed that water quality was safe enough for human contact, because that closure happened, we immediately, usually it's red or green, pass or fail, right? So that you don't have to know numbers or be a scientist to understand. We try to make it very simple, but we actually put a yellow kind of caution warning based on that closure, because we just wanted people to know that while our data showed it was safe, there was a beach closure. Mm. And so we're just trying to, I do think the problem that I see across the board, whether it's Colonial Beach or here in DC, is they don't really have good public notification systems. That's one of the goals of our Swimmable Potomac campaign, is to make these communities do a better job of noticing the public better, right? Because, you know, it can't just be put on a DEQ website. Like, this is why we think this app is, and the response that we're seeing by over 90,000, you know, river users is pretty extraordinary. We are becoming the authority on this. And because we just feel in a multi-state jurisdiction like this, we're just not seeing the state and, you know, federal agencies or the local agencies really stepping up to do the job of properly notifying the public when it's not safe to use the river. And so I don't know if that's on Colonial Beach's radar, but we would certainly love to see more of that.
It didn't help that it happened over a holiday weekend either,
for sure,
obviously,
for sure.
From a government perspective. So in terms of the event at Colonial Beach, you guys are still investigating to see whether or not there are things that can be done to improve the way the treatment plant works and deals with sewage, as well as communication.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, next step for us is trying to get a tour of the treatment plant, which I think is pretty easy, but then, you know, really digging into the compliance history of their sanitary sewer overflows. Is this a repeat problem where they're having usual overflows like we saw right across the river with St. Mary's County and with Metcalfe?
In other words, is it common?
Yeah, because under the Clean Water Act, you can't bring a polluter to court unless the agencies are not enforcing a law and it's an ongoing situation, right? So if it's an ongoing situation and we bring this to Virginia DEQ's attention, they're like, well, yeah, we're aware that this is an ongoing problem, but the city says that they're going to fix this, but it doesn't happen. That gives groups like ours or even any citizen under the Clean Water Act the ability to sue polluters and bring them to court, you know. And it's always the last line of defense for us, but it's quite amazing how often we have to get to that point just to get the remedy of fixing a failing sewage problem or a leaking oil pipe. I mean, we are in a lawsuit right now with Alexandria. They've been discharging Napoleon and coal tar into the river for 45 years without a permit. I approached them 6 years ago about it and asked them. They said that they wanted to work with us, and they kept stalling and stalling, and we finally had to file a lawsuit. And now we're fixing it. We're reaching a settlement agreement, which I'm very proud of. And it's going to do a lot of benefits for cleaning up the river and stopping that source of pollution. But unfortunately, it often takes something like that to get their attention and really get to the bottom and fix the problem and get them to, you know, pony up the money and resources and make those commitments toward clean water. But that's a big part of what we do, quite frankly, is kind of reprioritizing a community or a town or a municipality or a big industry like Dominion to reprioritize. You are going to do more. You're going to do better to take care of this river. If not, we'll see you in federal court.
Do you usually find that the polluters that you approach are cooperative, or does it more often go into this adversarial role that you're talking about?
I've been doing this for 22 years. They rarely cooperate because they often underestimate that we're able to do what we do. And it's frustrating. I wish they would understand that, look, we have an army of lawyers that represent us legal for $2 million in pro bono legal service a year. And we don't want to use that resource, but we'll do it if we have to. We win or settle successfully 95% of our cases. We always win because science and law is always on our side. I just think that a lot of polluters aren't used to dealing with a group like ours, that they come in and start talking about things that they would like them to do, but they're really willing to roll up the sleeves. Now, I will say for us as an organization, a lot of these issues often take 6, 8, 10 years to resolve.
It's a long game.
But that's the thing is, once we decide, like, we're going to go after this bad actor and we have the lawyers to represent us, we see it through to the end. But we've had a lot of success in the progress. And then often, at the end, we often, a lot of these polluters, like, will thank us or we'll have a ribbon cutting ceremony about, like, thanks for making us do the right thing. So, everybody forgets about all the hostility and frustration and the angst in the beginning. But I've just, after 22 years, I've realized that this is just part of the game, if you want to call it that, and what it takes to actually get to, you know, like with Alexandria and their combined sewer system, that is a $615 million investment. Now, we fixed that through legislative actions, but the bottom line is they weren't willing to make those investments in the river until we kind of passed the law making them do it. And the same with coal ash, and the list goes on and on. Yeah, unfortunately.
I guess at the end of it, you got to have the ribbon cutting ceremony because you want a little good PR out of all the money you spent.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't really care. It's just getting to that point where we know that, an industry or municipality that's breaking the law and out of compliance and causing problems is actually now investing to fix the problem and is on track to fix the problem. And then once that's done, we're on to the next polluter that's causing problems for the river, you know.
It sounds like they really underestimate you, because let's face it, if a typical citizen were to use these citizen tools that are set up in the Environmental Protection Act, they wouldn't have the resources to last 6, 8, 10 years, or the patience, quite frankly. But you guys, you know, you guys stick with it, and you've got the resources to do it. And maybe they don't realize it when they start. They just think, oh, it's just some guy who's complaining about, you know,
who calls himself the river keeper.
Yeah, the river keeper, you know. Oh, yeah, we can get rid of this guy. Just lawyer up on him. It'll be fine. Yeah. And then they find out that you've got, you know, basically millions of dollars of legal resources behind you that you can back it up with.
We do.
Dean Nowyuk from the Potomac Riverkeeper Network, thank you very much for coming to WWER. Been very informative and very interesting. Do you have any last thoughts that you want to add before we say goodbye?
My last thoughts are that we want to engage people, I call it building community around clean water, who just really care about this issue. So if you're interested in water quality monitoring or organizing trash cleanups or becoming a member, we would very much appreciate more engagement from Colonial Beach and people that live there, because this river is the lifeblood of the entire region. You know, it supplies people with drinking water to over 6 million people, and tens of thousands of people recreate on every year. So, you know, we're just looking, trying to connect with those people that really care about this river and want to see it protected. And we'd love to talk to you. So that's really my departing message is we just want to connect with people who really care about the river.
Dean, thank you very much. To remind our listeners, if you want to find out more about the River Keepers, their website is PotomacRiverKeeperNetwork.org, and that app we were talking about is called Swim Guide. Dean, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.